Yeah, by 10.
Conference record has joined the conference.
Thank you.
insist that that should be centralized, that the computer should figure it out, and they should have their eligibility be centralized. There was near unanimous response, all except one, for centralized third-party assisted online applications. And again, I think there may have been some confusion about what this meant. Certainly, we recognize the third-party assisted encounter is a local one. But they're entering it into this computer system, and the eligibility determination, most people saw as central, and I think that one probably would too. I didn't want to call you out, Bob.
I get it. My comments were pretty clear that I didn't understand it.
And then it's hard to get one from someone who missed the last meeting.
Yeah. Jumping
in
the middle.
So he did a great job, but there were a few outliers, and I thought, oh, he doesn't understand the question. Split vote on centralized versus combination for local district assisted online. The majority was central. Again, I think we had the same issue. So what I'm recommending, for what it's worth, is that a consensus position could be that local districts and other local assisters help consumers at the local level. Again, that's the local part, the assisting part. Input information into the online system, but the eligibility determination for all insurance affordability programs is centralized. And let me define insurance affordability programs, which I realize I do later, but I say it here first. Insurance affordability programs is a new term that HHS has devised as part of the ACA. It's all over the MAGI regs that is defined as Medicaid, CHIP, a basic health plan if the state has it, and the exchange subsidy programs. And the obligation is that someone gets looked at for all insurance affordability programs at the same time, wherever they come in. So these are new, so we're moving away from these words of Medicaid and CHIP and something else to insurance affordability programs, are people comfortable with this consensus position on the online application?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say there's nodding for those on the phone, but
yeah.
Mail and phone, there was a lot of consensus. Pretty much everybody was at centralizing phone applications, and all but one was centralizing mail-in applications. So I think that we can, that's kind of where we are. In-person was nearly 80% of the responses selected a combination approach of local workers providing in-person assistance in the community, but sending all the information through the central system for eligibility determination. And then here could be some of the same issues, because two respondents chose the function to remain local. And so one wrote that local was DOH staff, not local district staff, which is an option. And the other local meant person at a community organization. And there the question is, does that mean the local person assisting, or does it actually mean doing the eligibility determination? If you have an in-person application and they're MAGI and you have an automated eligibility system. And must have a local presence. That's clear in all of your comments. That there's county worker, state worker, community organization, whatever you have, there's all these entry points to assist consumers in applying for all insurance affordability programs. But the eligibility system can be centralized through the automated system. And I will say a theme that runs through all your answers is where you have achieved automation, centralized. Where you have not achieved automation, hands-on help. And you see that throughout even some of the special programs. It was, well, if you can automate it, do it centrally, but if you can't, keep it local.
Just a question.
Sure.
Are you assuming the local district involved in a state employee?
We're not making that assumption at the moment. I don't
just
think
physically that they would be local.
That there would be local workers, and I think we're assuming there would be a combination of. So I see what you're saying. I don't have to say county worker necessarily, but they'd be local district presence, community organization presence. We can work on the wording of this, but I don't think we in this group can say whether they're state or local district workers. Do you agree with me on that?
Yes, I would suggest don't use the word district.
Okay.
Because if you use district, you're referring to county.
County worker.
So if you want to say local or local, That could even include community-based.
You could say local parent, government or community organization.
I could say government. Could I say government?
I'm worried if we just have the word local that it leaves it so open that people may wonder. But I appreciate that we don't want to say necessarily. But it could be county, right? It could be county.
Could be state.
Other government or community agency, right? But not use district, right?
Right, local district would mean social services.
Because I'm not sure. I mean, I'm okay using government and community-based, but I'm not sure we'd have consensus. I bet there are some local districts that look like it to be local district workers. So I'm not sure we have consensus on that. Maybe state or local district, but I think we have consensus. There's some government function at the local level that has to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just a question. This is Trilby from Empire Justice. It sounds like in the consensus that we're working on right now, we want to stay away from saying whether it would be a state or county function. But I did think that some of our discussion last time got into that, you know, what the relationship should be between the state and the county and which functions would still be county functions and whether the state would be overseeing that at all through any kind of RFA process.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a point at which we're going to get into those waters, or have we decided to stay away from that area? Because I thought that was a very rich discussion we had last time, and I was hoping we'd be able to say something about those issues.
You certainly could. I mean,
this is Melinda from Manette. So right now it sounds like the distinction is what's centralized versus what's local.
Right.
And we're saying local can mean state government. It can mean that are located locally. It could mean county workers or local government workers, and it could mean facilitated enrollers, which could be community organizations or plans, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we've agreed that we're not, for this stage of the analysis, we're not distinguishing who play that local role. We're just figuring out where we think there needs to be a local role.
Right.
Is your question going to the centralized? Because I was assuming centralized meant a statewide.
Well, I was just going to say it does.
State.
In these, it does.
Right. And my question was not going to centralized. I had the same assumption that would be a state centralized system.
So you're saying, when are we going to get to that question of what do we need?
Or are we?
Exactly.
Or are we? Yeah. Or are we? Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm confused. Because I'm assuming centralized and regional are two separate conversations.
We don't see regional on the table.
I thought we did,
but last time, I think a lot of the discussion that Trilby was talking about was around regional versus local, and centralized today means something different.
I mean, what I took away, I think we collectively took away from the last meeting, is that regional, with one except, we had one member write me a preference for not losing regional, but most regional was really off the table. And so we took the survey to say, let's get some guidance from the members around what's state and what's local. And local being broad, not defining local, and central meaning state in a sense. So we did take regional off the table.
Okay. And I guess my question then is, will this group try to define local at some point?
Or make recommendations about...
Exactly. Make
about
recommendations.
State government, local department of social services, CBO.
Right. I don't want to make an assumption for you, Steve, or for the group, but it strikes me that's something we could decide, that if we want to hold another meeting, that that's the focus
mm-hmm.
of our meeting. Because I think what we need to get agreement on to get as far as we need to get today is to distinguish between centralized and local.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Then that is a really important question. What is local?
Because
we should have a discussion on that. I just don't know if it fits today or if that would be a reason to meet again.
All right. And it just, for me, leaving some of the most complicated eligibility determinations local, those that cannot be automated, I would want to know how those are going to be handled, because for consumers, those are the types of applications that end up delayed. Those are the applications that are a big challenge, and so I'd want to make sure that this group had a sense of how those are going to be handled. So I would be voting for us to take that issue up maybe at the next and schedule.
Yeah. Okay. Or if we get through this and have time in our time,
yeah.
we can choose how to spend that.
Sure.
Right.
I mean, that's, you know, we dedicated an hour and a half to getting to our model of what's state and what's local. If we get there, then we can say, I had some things to talk about, but you've added another. We could say what's the most important thing to talk about
right.
if we have 15 minutes left or something.
Yeah.
Okay. So this gets increasingly more complicated. I mean, online applications is actually the easy one. There was the most consensus on that. Then in-person got a little dicier, but not so much. And then magic exception cases are more interesting. And I think, I mean, we define exception cases as those that seem, I think I'm missing words here. They seem, they're magi. They come in as magi. But Medicaid rules apply, so they kind of fall out of MAGI. And they could, and I wanted to, I think some of the differences in the voting, I see it as reflecting perhaps easy exception cases and harder exception cases. And that's, so I want to sort of introduce that, which is, you know, an exception could be someone doesn't show up in the tax data in the federal hub. And we need to get, and they show up in nothing, and we need to get documents from them. Well, that I think people would agree that because they came in online, they need a document, it could stay central. We don't need to bounce that off to the local district to start all over again with them. But then there might be someone who really moves from MAGI to non-MAGI and bounces out as a MAGI exception case because really they're not MAGI. They need a disability determination or some other reason. And we haven't fully, or at least I haven't fully digested the MAGI rules to know how these break down and what we're likely to get and what kind of volume we're likely to get. But these are two clear examples where there's sort of an easy exception case that should probably stay where it originated. And then tougher ones, which gets to Trilby's point. And so we had a mixed response, most people identifying combination. And the combination kind of was along these themes, which is, you know, if you have automation, leave it central. If you have more automation over time, move more centrally. But to the extent that you don't have automation and it's more hands-on labor intensive, it should stay local. But then there were four respondents that wrote something like this. If the application comes to a central location via the phone or web, the central location should be equipped to handle exception cases. Now, again, the range of those we haven't defined. This seems to make sense. There still might be some that bounce out. If the application originates locally, there should be in-person local help, but the input should be transmitted through the same central system. So if it's automated, that makes sense. If it's not automated, like a disability determination, it then bumps down to be referred locally. And in my mind, I was thinking local district, but I can just use words like locally for this purposes.
Any comments on that? Are everybody following that?
Can I just ask a question? When I look at the difference between combination and then choosing local or central, I view that as meaning that I don't think it should be the exclusive responsibility of either one or the other. And so even when I put local, I think I'm more inclined to say that it could still be central if that can be accommodated, but that there ought to be an ability for a local entity to resolve it. And that some things are so easy and so straightforward that we should not provide for that and require central attention. But other things, as we go forward and transition at the state's determination and coming to the counties, could say, now this one we're going to need your help on, and we'll take the ones we can, but there are going to be some that we're going to need you to do. And I wondered about what your view was on exclusivity versus if you pick local. Could it mean, and does that mean only locals can do it, or could it be that central could still do it?
I can tell you how I interpreted the survey responses, but then I tried in the overheads. We've tried to weave through what people may have meant, and that's what I'm kind of tossing out for judgment here. But
right.
If people check central, we assumed, or I assumed, wholly central. If people check local, wholly local. A lot of people check combination for many things. Some followed the rules and wrote what they meant by combination. Many just checked combination, and then I inferred they mean both. Because, and then some people, and I think you were one, Commissioner Doar, who actually actually wrote a lot about automation, to the extent you automate. So I inferred your combination to mean if it was automated, it could be handled centrally. If it was not easily automated, there should be a local place for it to go. And if I misinterpreted that, that's, you know, I need to know that.
No, no, you didn't. I just want to be clear that I don't want the choice of local to imply, and I should have understood this better, exclusively local, that only the local entity can do it. I would rather have put combination to imply that here's an area where there must be a local presence, but the central responsibility is still available as well. That's what I meant to say.
Okay, so, and you did say that.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I think you did.
Yeah, you were clear. You're clear in the
All
sense.
Right. Yep. All right, thank you.
Yep.
And one respondent actually supports regional hubs and really, and supports the idea that essentially, like, not having local districts and instead creating regional hubs. But I don't think we're there. So I acknowledge, and I'll keep talking to this person, and we'll see, you know.
I just would like to add, though, that I do think there's a need on these very complicated cases, particularly in small counties, for some support system for
them.
Yeah,
yes. We had that recommendation.
And so if that's not, in my mind, that's a function the region could have served.
Right.
I'm not wedded to a region, but I do feel pretty strongly about some support for these folks in these very highly technical.
Yes, I'd like to echo that, Trilby from Empire Justice, and also to say support and also this need for consistency and standardization, which could have been a regional function, but, you know, some other way to achieve that.
I want to reinforce that as well, because I think, you know, it's easy in these discussions to get lost in who's going to do what, and we forget that, you know, there are people that are coming into the system who need human contact. Now, whether it's a state person or a local person, we can argue that all day long, and we may need to, but, I mean, I think we have to realize that there is going to be that human element that's going to be needed, and how do you accommodate that under a new system? How do you redesign it so those people don't fall through the cracks? It is an important distinction, though. Is it local or a county worker or a state worker? I think that is an important
Even if that person were in the same chair.
Well, if they're under one roof, I think it's not. You've made the distinction that it's still in a local office and there's a local presence, and you'll preserve that human contact. But I think at some point we do need to talk about this.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Fran is interested in what that means as well.
Sure.
Well, one way or the other, whether it's state or local, they're probably still going to end up public employees. But the question becomes, which is more useful? I mean, you already have employees now that know half of the system. Do we start all over again, or do we use our existing employees and expand their horizons? I think that's the question.
Well, I think you also have to add in the fact that Medicaid is built into temporary assistance. So at some point in time, a local district person is going to have to do Medicaid.
That's right.
Into TANF, so consider that. It would almost not make a great deal of sense to create another entity on top of that to deal with just the Medicaid portion of that.
Melinda?
Can we keep with what we said we were going to do in terms of not getting this conversation? I agree that we need to have this conversation, but just make it through this list, because I'm confused about exception cases.
Okay.
Because the next slide is on NAGI.
Mm-hmm.
So you described two exception cases. One was what I thought exception cases were, which is it's a NAGI person, but they're a little more complicated. They don't show up in the databases, for example. The second example was it turns out this person isn't NAGI, and then what happens with them? And I think those are two really different things, and so I was just seeing if we could come to a consensus.
There might be, and you'll see the two consensus recommendations and the exception and the MAGI are almost the same, so that's probably part of the problem.
Okay.
I can see a third or even more than three, but I can see they're still MAGI, but there's some manual, like, child support, or there's a referral they need for something else that's required federally in Medicaid that isn't handled through MAGI. And we haven't figured all that out of how these different Medicaid paths fit with MAGI. So that could still be an exception case. They're still MAGI. They're not non-MAGI, but they have some other regular Medicaid pathway.
I think my feedback was that the extent that they're MAGI, I think we should really be trying to, and that they're coming in through these electronic pathways, I think we should really be trying to accommodate, you know, child support doesn't sound like an exception to me. That's part of MAGI. So if we're saying that, you know, anybody in a single-parent household no longer has access to the centralized system, that's a pretty big exception to the rule.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, from my perspective, I think we need to be trying to build the centralized MAGI system around what we know is going to be the case for a lot of families, and that where it gets really complicated is the non-MAGI. Always knowing that we have the in-person option, that person has the ability to go and get in-person help at the local level, because we've already said that there's going to be local in-person and they can switch over to go there. But where I get concerned is the idea that, you know, if you don't show up in a database or if you're a single-parent family and you need to talk to child support, then you get pushed out of the automated system and you need to go back to the local office in person and there aren't any other choices. I think that would be a bad result, in my view.
Yeah, I would agree with that and would think that it might make sense to try to tease out what the MAGI exception cases are and see if most of them couldn't.
Okay. I mean, my concern about child support is today children are eligible regardless, so they could go through the electronic system and get referred to a local district. Today, adults cannot, and so you can't get Medicaid unless you cooperate with child support, and cooperating with child support means getting referred to a 4D agency in the local district. So unless that's different in the new rules, and we may try to push CMS on that because they're saying people have to get through in one sitting, you have to go through all this. If it can be they get through, they get Medicaid, and then they get referred to the 4D agency, but if getting referred is a condition of eligibility, they stop there.
Didn't the referral happen as part of the online application where one of the screens comes up and says, you know, you will need to go see, and then the local office comes up and they're instructed to go there?
Do you have to go in person? Is that part of the rule?
Well, I do not believe that the Medicaid eligibility determination should be held up pending the in-person visit. The referral has to happen. But my understanding then is that these proceed on parallel paths, and you don't wait for the in-person or to see whether it happened to do your Medicaid determination.
Is the 4D requirement face-to-face? Does it have to be in-person?
I don't know the answer to that.
The 4D programs in the counties and the state and the city aren't prepared at this point to do a quick turnaround of cooperation interviews or starting the process so they can, in time for an eligibility determination, can respond back and say, yep, they cooperated, you can make them eligible. So I just got to say, that's not going to happen. If somebody thinks it is, I don't know what they're kidding around. On the other hand, an automated referral could be made to the local child support office, and the child support office could be responsible for, at some point in the future, doing a non-cooperation determination or determining that this particular custodial parent is not cooperating, and then send a message back to whoever is in charge of Medicaid where whatever sanction would take place. I don't know. What is the consequences of non-cooperating?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Judy, but I think it would mean the person is not eligible for Medicaid.
Correct.
So at that point,
the children would be. The non-cooperating parent would not.
Exactly. So if the parent during the online application checked a box saying, I will cooperate, I will go to the referral, then it would seem like the case could proceed, eligibility determination could be made. If later a report comes in that cooperation broke down for whatever reason, then, you know, action is taken.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to get there. I agree with that.
Okay.
I think
okay.
That's the only practical way to do it. I love child support enforcement and think it should be enforced and made available to all single parents so that all the assets and that are in a family are taken into account of to support the family without government assistance. But there is no central child support program. There's no state child support program that could do that right now.
Right. No.
In advance of determining eligibility. But the message should be clear that they have to do it, and if they don't, in the next 6 months, and usually non-cooperation results when they don't show up at required hearings or they don't go to interviews that are necessary in order to determine the whereabouts of the NCP.
Can I ask a practical question? Because it's been a long time since I was involved in this part of it, and I don't remember how it works. My memory, though, is that it's a small minority of cases where while there are a lot of single-parent families that come through, most fill out something saying, yes, I'll cooperate and provide some information. It gets referred over, and for most of them, that's the end of it. And there is not, there isn't a lot of follow-up, or there's certainly not non-cooperation. Can someone just refresh my memory about how is a practice?
That is correct. Isn't this right? I mean, that is correct. There's no real aggressive enforcement of this responsibility now in New York State, I believe, and certainly I have to acknowledge it in New York City, and it's some uncertainty about whether it's a requirement. And so that is correct, but that doesn't mean it couldn't be built over or couldn't if it needed to be. But right now, the only group that really gets aggressively required to cooperate is the cash assistance recipient families. But those who are non-cash, they can come, that services are provided, but the cooperation requirement is very spotty in terms of, often people say, sure, I'll cooperate, and then that's the end of it. And nothing ever happens.
Yeah.
And I think you have to remember, too, it's a medical execution of the child support order, not necessarily a cash execution. So that's what you're, and a lot of times, because you're going to wind up in family court on this matter at some point in time, the hearing examiners are, there's a lot of variety out there in regards to how they'll handle this situation when it arrives. So in this particular case, I think you're on to it. You need to have a box on the application process that drops into a child support referral. If there's noncompliance after a certain period of time, that sends out a message to the Medicaid agency, who then has to deal with it.
No, I like that. It allows Medicaid to go through in an automated fashion, even with a child support referral.
And so is it like
just one thing? If the federal guidance on this is very strong, you're going to have to make sure that we do something. Because if we don't, they'll come around 5 years from now and say, you never followed up on this requirement.
But I think what we're talking about isn't different than what we're doing right now.
No, it's the same, right.
I think we're basically automating what is happening at a manual level right now.
That there's a federal requirement in there now. This has been quite an issue of contention with local districts that we have to not only provide that a Medicaid application exists, but also the dollar amounts expended to date, what the projected dollar amounts would be. So there's quite an amount of work that goes into it, but you still wind up in front of that hearing examiner with so-and-so spent $100,000 and then trying to craft a child around that. And that's federal. That's not.
Is it true that for most Medicaid-only families, it doesn't even get that far, though? I mean,
I'm going to say the overwhelming majority already have child support in place if it's needed, and that when it does come up, that referral is pretty seamless at this point in time. It's not. I don't think this is a huge issue.
Okay.
And I would just ask Kelly, do you see it that way too? We're a small percent of cases you really have a problem with.
But there is agreement that there will be cases that are very complicated, require a lot of attention, and that those need to be dealt with either at the local level in person. But I also think that point that's in here about that if people do it automatically and it goes to the state, would the state then refer you back to local, or can they handle it through the exchange?
Well, I think what Melinda's recommending with the consensus recommendation is to really – if they come in through the centralized system and they're MAGI and there's a few things they need to complete that doesn't get all done automated in the computer, that be handled centrally. And that not confusing exception with non-MAGI.
Right.
I think that's what she's saying.
Right.
And if
it seems to me that most of those problems can be resolved over the phone with someone. You don't need to come into someone in person.
You
always have the option to do that if you want to, because remember, we have our in-person system there. But that I think we shouldn't be forcing someone to go into a different place for help to resolve those problems. If they're perfectly happy talking on the phone saying, okay, I'm going to fax you over, I'm going to email you over this document right now, and you have somebody there, there should be somebody there who can handle that for them.
Ready to move on? Judy?
Yes.
Non-MAGI. Two more groups, non-MAGI and special Medicaid. Non-MAGI, there was a fair amount of consensus for combination approach, and I would say that the themes that I culled out of the responses, because they really varied by what non-MAGI groups people were talking about. There was a lot of variability. The themes were the goal should be for as much automation as possible. Consider automating some non-magi before others. There was a recognition that some non-magis are really not that hard to automate. The MSP population rises up as one that you probably could automate and don't need to. And then there's other, you know, long-term care applications with a lot of asset, you know, look-back periods that are very complicated, and they're going to take longer. So instead of lumping them all in one bucket and saying they're consider looking at ones for early wins on automation and automating them, and then leaving others. Provide, now this gets to Anne's point about several people wrote provide centralized supports, and there we can have the conversation whether it's centralized or regionalized. But so the example was legal review of complex financial instruments. I'm sure we could come up with other things. And does it make sense to have, my staff tell me we actually do that today, but local districts have ownership. Some of them will provide assistance in reviewing legal documents for trusts and stuff in the department, but then they want to run it through their whole legal system in the local, in the county office because they're accountable. So while we do provide that assistance today, it doesn't speed things up, I am told, because we kind of do it twice. And the question is that real that we would get rid of that? I mean, if you have ownership, you have ownership, and you're going to feel a need to run it through your own attorneys, even if they aren't really familiar with these financial instruments. And then, so that's something worth talking about. And then just everyone wrote the importance of hands-on support for vulnerable labor-intensive populations. One respondent suggested specialized third-party assisters like FEEs for long-term care and disability applications. I mean, good idea, requires funding. It can certainly be on our list. It's probably not going to happen in the short term. And so a recommended consensus could be automate non-MAGI where possible. Consider automating some, like MSP, before others, and then provide a combination of local specialized hands-on help and centralized supports for assisters. Is that something people mm-hmm. get behind? Just nodding over on the table for those on the phone.
Yeah, sorry.
The phone are nodding.
Yeah, I really like that idea of FEs for these applications.
Specialized FEs?
Yeah, and I know... funding is the issue, but if there would be a way to work that into the recommendation, that's what...
I think we certainly can. I mean, I think I just threw in my state hat, which is not going to happen in next year's budget. But I think it's certainly, you know, the disability community have been asking for disability FEs for years. We have mm-hmm. wanted to accommodate that. We've not thought it made sense to take our what is now a $15 million FE program and take out a hunk for disability. We really think you need to increase and make a disability or long-term care FE program with additional money. And, you know, we'll be lucky to hang on to the $15 million we have.
Does that mean it's not being considered to just broaden the role of existing FEs?
We've done that. We have done that. Where CBO FEs have asked for that because they have populations, we've let them and we've trained them.
And I wonder if that wouldn't make sense for the entire program, given that the this population is now being mandated into managed care, that even plan FEs should be able to handle.
You know,
that.
I can tell you, you know, being at the ground floor of the FE program, it started out as a program for children. It did an amazing job enrolling kids. When we added adults, children enrollment plummeted. Not to say it's not good to get adults enrolled, but it was the same money. Actually, it doubled. We went from children and we doubled it to add adults. The good old days. It went from 10 to 20 million for, and it was a whole program. But the children enrollment plummeted, and adults skyrocketed, and childless adults skyrocketed. All good things, not. But I'm just telling you what happened. And so now we have a $15 million program through budget cuts. And if we add long-term care and disability, my fear is it's just going to take away enrollment from somebody. And so we could, I mean. You can certainly recommend that. I'm not. I just think it's a better recommendation with some additional resources.
Well, there are probably a lot of these that would be better if they had more resources attached to them. But I think from policy perspective, it's an important point to make.
Well, Thompson, but from a plan perspective, I mean, if the population starts to change, who we're enrolled and responsible for, I mean, I can't see my FE program looking the same, you know, 6 months from now as the way it looks right now. So, I mean, I think the issue of what the FE program is focused on and how you use those resources and who are going to be the neediest folks out there that are going to need assistance is a real one. I also think the idea that an exchange will provide a better sweep
of eligibles to be identified, which means that the FE program, which is often out there as the sweepers, if you will, available.
That's a very good point.
So those are things you need.
That's a very good point.
So let's make sure we make a note of that as something to go into the recommendation.
Something about the FE.
Expanded role of the FE.
Absolutely.
And I'd like that recommendation to include some reference to what Judy said, because I was going to...
What?
What Judy said about needing to... this is about expanding access and not basically spreading things more thinly, because I...
Would you accept... I mean, I guess the question I throw out to you, Jan, would you accept that? Say we want additional resources, but barring that, allow the existing ones to do this. I mean, we've kind of done that already when... You know, we have done that already when people have asked us. Some haven't wanted to.
I heard Trilby go one step forward and say require them to do more, and that's where I get worried. Mm-hmm. Because I do think I have the exact same memory of Judy as we... It was like kids, and then all of a sudden... It was adult enrollment, and I think the same thing will happen for the disability population because so intensive. You know, just it takes you 3-4 times longer to work through one of those applications than it does for someone who doesn't have it.
The other piece, too, is the FE contract or the CBOs. The plans are different. I mean, I think we can certainly
right.
the health plans to broaden their role and provide training and – You know, that's because they don't have grant. It's not a grant program with an RFP. It's different. So I think there are different conversations, probably a little more flexibility on the plan side there and changing role of FE for the plans. But the CBOs, it's grants with entities that basically focus on families. And so it would be different bidders for the disability and long-term care community, as well it should be.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Separated out today, we'll have FEs just for that population. And they go here because they could just easily overwhelm an FE program.
Well, maybe language like encourage rather than require, allow and encourage, so that there would be an awareness that the program is open to that now. And I think you might be right. There might be some new bidders who would come in, but then there might be capacity in the program to help that population in the community as well. And hopefully the plans will be shifting over as well. But I think that population is really coming into managed care now, so it makes a lot of sense for there to be some shift. And
I think we should keep this distinction between plan FE and CBO FE. My concern isn't around plan FE. My concern is around CBO FE. I think they're
different. And that's what I was referring to when I was referring
I think they're different entities who would play that role effectively who are going to be able to – I think you would contract with different entities to do that. And it's a different function. And in general, for the disabled population – The purpose of FE originally was to take the uninsured and bring them into insured. The purpose of FE for the disabled population is to smooth their pathway into coverage. The disabled population ends up covered because their health needs are so overwhelming, and if the worst case scenario, they end up in the hospital and they rack up bills and someone gets covered. It's a horrible way to do it, but they end up covered, and I think the structure of the program has not been built around that problem, and we need either additional resources or we need to make some decisions that we're going to shift some resources to do that other function. And I wouldn't want that to be done inadvertently. I personally would have some concerns about saying we're just going to open it up and see what happens on it.
So what way would you want to proceed to address the community facilitated enrollers and their ability? If we say we will allow them to do disability applications. How would you want that to be thoughtfully approached?
Well, I think we should be making a recommendation that there should be additional funds. I hear what you're
saying. I'm fine with that, but absent the funds, that's where I think it gets sticky.
Yeah. I think, and I'm okay with saying they're allowed to do it. I think the next question is, are we recommending that there be a different contracting standard, that we say now we are going to require a certain number or target contracts, and if that's what percentage? Are we talking 5 million of the 15? Are we talking 10 million of the 15? That's where I think that
we don't want to get that specific. But we want to say the department should think,
that we recommend the department develop, in light of the new moving all these folks into managed care and in light of the new MAGI rules, that the department needs to review its FEs and make sure that all populations have access to skilled.
But FEs are not – I mean, the primary role of FEs are about getting them eligible for coverage.
Right.
The enrollment brokers play a different role around managed care enrollment. So I I don't know that the connection. I agree that the population moving into managed care needs intensive assistance in that process, but I don't know that FEs are going to be the primary vehicle for that. I mean, most of those folks are already covered and are going to be going from fee-for-service over into managed care, and FEs aren't. That's not what their primary role is. Their primary role is to take the uninsured and get them into coverage. So, I mean, maybe I'm being too splitting hairs or something, but I think that it's a different problem that requires a solution that is way overdue for a solution.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think just saying, okay, well, now FEs, we're going to open it up, is going to be that solution.
Well, it's true. Historically, what the FE program has been has not been at all geared toward this population, but it remains the only pot of money available to assist people with applications. So it's hard not to look to it in thinking about, you know, what kind of help will there be for the non-magic population. And maybe there's somewhere else we want to look, but I think that it's an issue that needs some thought.
I agree with that.
I think and a lot of this, too, you have other dollars being put in other places. You know, just take the local mental health agencies in Orange County. They do a lot of the applications for people coming in for assistance now. They're not FEs. They're not funded. Their job is to manage to assist people with disabilities, so you're getting that application in anyway. Their expertise is growing every day, I mean, essentially, in terms of processing some of these applications. And that might be another way to look at it, especially when you have new health managed care organizations being created. Well, that may become part of what that case management arm is doing already.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe some of it is, you know, assessing what are the now and, you know, how are we best suited to address this need?
Right. Both community and plan-based resources.
Right.
Right.
Great. And these other resources that Commissioner Jolly is mentioning.
Ready to move on? I'm just going to complete the consensus recommendation we came up with for the non-MAGIs. Automate non-MAGI where possible. Consider automating some before others. Did I read this already? I think
yeah.
I did, and I think we all nodded. All right, I'm going to move
on.
Special population. This was, you know, what's surprising about special populations to me is even people who check some things local, check almost all of the special population central. There was a lot of consensus on centralization of special populations, which I would have thought it would be the opposite. There was one response that was almost all local for these groups, but the majority was for centralization. And, some of the specials were MSP, so that one made sense because people wrote that earlier. And then consensus was to automate where possible and provide local assistance for the more complex groups. I mean, a theme you'll see running through the whole survey. And I'd say that the most mixed responses were for spend down and child support. And I think that one response, I think, got at the heart of what made it mixed, and I'm just going to throw that out on spend down. It was actually Commissioner Jolly's response, so should be some ability to automate pieces of spend down. You should be able to, and we've looked at an eMedMe solution in the past, which we try to get on the eMedMe queue, which is, can you take provider bills that come in and know the people on spend down and automate they're meeting their spend down? So to the extent that you can use automation, you should, is what he said. And then there's going to be others where you can't, and that's really hands-on and local, but you can reduce some of the local workload by automating what you can. So I throw that out as a theme that I thought was very nicely put for spend down that may be what people meant when they checked both or they wrote. And then child support we talked about. We just talked about it. I think we have a good solution. I like what Trilby said on that. And if Rusha couldn't get that down, I'll have you repeat it to her later, how we would actually implement that. Several respondents raised concerns about separate determinations, and there, the PA-1, and I'll do SSI too, but the PA-1, you know, right now PA comes through with Medicaid, but if someone comes through the exchange online and is MAGI, they're going to get Medicaid, and let's say a month later they go and they apply for PA, and they get PA. We could end up with two cases. I mean, I know that's our issue on the systems of how to resolve that. We're not very good at it today. Hopefully we'll be better at it in the future. But even more, someone goes to PA, isn't PA eligible. The district does a separate determination for MA.
and they get sent to us in our new system on MA, we can just see places where this creates issues that we just have to have increased sensitivity to, because that PA piece is a local piece, and the MA piece ultimately will be done locally, but ultimately rises up to our central system. The other thing districts tell me happens pretty frequently, I think New York City wrote this, that someone comes in for PA, does not get PA, gets Medicaid, but then comes back because they didn't do one of the things that are PA ruled. They didn't show up for something or, you know, do a requirement that is not a Medicaid requirement. Now they've accomplished it. They get PA. The Medicaid case is supposed to close, and then the other Medicaid case opens with the PA, and that creates complexity. So as we move toward a MAGI automated world where some of these people are going to live in those worlds, it creates and people wrote about that. They just wrote about the incredible complexity of managing these, the SSIs who come in an automated fashion but then aren't SSI and get Medicaid but then do get SSI. So it isn't for, I don't think it's for us to resolve. I think what I was saying is we hear you on some of this complexity that we have to, you know, really sit down with some of you in, you know, not necessarily this group, and as we build our system and start to move forward and sort these out more. So I just wanted to call them out here as what people wrote as increased complexity. And I think our consensus is similar to the non-MAGI, which is automate where possible, do some before others where there's easy automation. MSP was the one people wrote about, and provide a combination of local hands-on help for individuals and centralized supports for assisters. Any other things in the special population that we didn't call out that's important to know about?
No, just the one idea that keeps floating around is maybe for the next discussion is taking a look at the DSS as facilitated enrollers going forward. Just to throw that out, because for some of those specialized populations, that's what we're doing. We're doing facilitated enrollment for specialized populations. And we're still hitting that centralized automated system, but we're just doing it from a hub somewhere. Yeah, that just kind of goes back to the idea that PA is local. People are going to walk into that DSS office, whether you like it or not, and there needs to be a way to help them at that point in time, especially people with special needs.
Yep.
Is your question also about child support in this section?
Oh. Yeah, we just had, before you came in, we had a long conversation about child support. Sorry.
We'll brief you at the break.
Okay.
Can I just ask a question, and I neglected to introduce our Monroe County Commissioner, Kelly Reed, who's here. We had a conversation this morning about some of the categories that are under this area, and we have a, I guess the question is about spend down. Does spend down actually continue to exist?
It's a very good question. I should have made that point.
Yeah.
I think it's a really open question, and we've identified the policy questions. We haven't answered them yet internally. But spend down is certainly, you know, as MAGI goes up to 138, some of our spend downs who are at 84% of poverty with a spend down will now be wrapped up in the newly eligible. So we need to do the analytics on that to say how many does that. Of course, we don't have our spend down, as Melinda knows painfully. We don't have our spend downs coded, so it's not like we can do that, which would be easy. We're going to have to proxy it in some way. But understand, how many do we sweep? And then the exchange subsidies come in above 138. So how does spend down compare to what they're going to be paying on the exchange, and do you need spend down anymore? I mean, I think that's a very legitimate, or you qualify for the exchange subsidy or the basic health plan if that becomes your path in between Medicaid and the exchange subsidies, because there'll be a pretty steep cliff between Medicaid and the first tier of the exchange.
And then you'll have the non-MAGI who will still need to use spend down, and the folks who cannot use the exchange.
I think the one area of interest there is going to be managed long-term care, where spend downs are very popular.
Right. Yeah.
But if we do go to a system where the managed long-term care plans are covering most everybody, then the spend down really is, you know, we were saying earlier today, really should be paid into that plan. And there shouldn't be a government interaction there. That dollar amount, a check is written to that plan. Once that plan satisfies that they have $2,000 of their $5,000 capitated fee, they get freed up to bill the additional remainder. And I think a lot of that will play itself out as we see long-term care change over the next year.
Yeah. That's a good point. And Trilby's is also a good point for non-MAGIs that won't have any other option.
Right.
And how many of those are getting...
And I don't know whether New York's made decisions about benchmark, but isn't it also possible that you would have people expansion, if there's not long-term care included in benchmark, who would want to spend down in order?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. If benchmark doesn't include long-term care.
Yeah. So I agree that spend down shrinks, or I think we spend down shrinks. We just don't know by how much.
Right.
That, right?
And I feel in my gut that there's still a role for it.
I do. Yeah. I think the
I don't think
it's hand
play, but I think it shrinks.
Not yeah, substantial. I don't know.
Well, maybe for the long-term care people,
okay,
who aren't exchange eligible, and benchmark. Melinda's right. I doubt benchmark's going to have long-term care services in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, if they need long-term care services, they need regular Medicaid, and they're above the regular Medicaid level, then the spend down is the only option.
Right.
So, does it make sense to keep? You know, we really need to analyze who's in spend down. I mean, I think you're. Families in spend down, it probably, you know, your mom's kids, and that probably goes away.
Right.
But your elderly and disabled shrinks, but I don't know that it becomes zero.
Right. And for the plans, it may get a little complicated because of the utilization of special needs trusts by the disabled. And, you know, there will still need to be a determination as to whether those satisfy eligibility requirements.
Let me move on to the two sort of pieces of information. I think we've gone through a lot and we're running out of time. I didn't think we'd run out of time, but we are.
Oh, yeah.
Actually thought we'd have extra time.
I'm not surprised.
We promised two pieces of information, which is what does the ACA say about who does Medicaid eligibility? What are the requirements around this new term, which is insurance affordability programs? Commissioner Dorr was particularly interested in this. This chart's for you. And then other state models is for Martha, so such as they are. But the law says, and the regs clearly say, the exchange must screen and determine MAGI eligibility for all insurance eligibility programs. And I've defined those for you, but I'll do it again. Medicaid, CHIP, a basic health plan if a state chooses to have one, and the exchange subsidies. But it also establishes new obligations on Medicaid agencies. The Medicaid agency has new obligations to screen all applicants for all insurance affordability programs. The MA agency must determine eligibility and enroll all MA-eligible consumers applying or renewing through the agency, including MAGI consumers. For those determined ineligible, the MA agency must assess individuals for potential eligibility for other insurance affordability programs and seamlessly transfer the individual's electronic account to the other program. This is verbatim out of the regs, just so you know, the seamlessly transfer electronic account. We're not there yet, clearly, but that is the obligation. There is not an obligation unless the exchange deems it so for you to determine the eligibility for that.
Right.
You are obligated to enroll the Medicaid. If Medicaid folks come to you and they're MAGI and they're eligible, you're obligated to enroll them. If they're not MAGI, you're obligated to know that. Today, if they're not Medicaid, you stop. You can't do that. You actually are obligated to know what they're eligible for and then seamlessly transfer an electronic all their electronic information so that the exchange can also seamlessly do the eligibility determination without having to reach the consumer. That's the whole theme of this, is no consumer has to provide information more than once. And then
that by Medicaid agency, you mean the local services to use that?
Under our world today, yes.
But it could be the state, right?
I mean, it's in a state it's the state. In New York right now, it's a locally administered program. So in our world today with no changes, that would mean the local DSS, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's what I was. I'm really. What is the definition of the Medicaid agency? If the
right.
Medicaid state, then and the local whatever local entity is serving clients is just an agent of the state. I'm trying to figure out. We're very concerned about taking on a responsibility we're not able to absorb. and a whole other group of clients that doesn't fit with what we currently do, and without getting – and how could we, Judy, limit that exposure?
I think one way is everything we've just talked about with the online – people coming in online. I mean, I doubt a lot of exchange subsidy people are going to come walk into the local district. So if we limit it to local district assisters, in-person assisters using our online tool – it goes up online. I think there what you have is the exposure of people who come in today, who come to you today because this is where they go, and they had an increase in income and they're no longer eligible. Your obligation isn't just to send them an ineligibility. Your obligation under the ACA, if you assist those people, is to send all their stuff to the exchange so the exchange can enroll them. That's
okay,
a new
well,
obligation,
but
I think...
Wait a minute. You said send all their stuff to the exchange. That's one thing, but determining eligibility is another, and enrolling.
You
so
don't
if,
have
so
to.
So here's transmission of the data, then that is different than having...
Right. No, I'm definitely making that point here. The obligation is to seamlessly transfer the information. It is not to make the eligibility determination.
No, it's what
okay.
It says, Judy. It says the MA must assess individuals for potential...
Potential eligibility.
Well, so screening.
So we're not enrolling.
Correct.
No, it sounds
but it is for.
But it sounds like you're clearly doing another step. You're saying,
well, you are.
And in other words, you're saying, okay, you're not eligible for Medicaid. Right now you go, that's it. Or we say, let's see if you have master heat.
Right.
Another question, maybe you already talked about. But what this seems to say to me is that the next step is, however, I see you are eligible for other insurance programs. Now, if somebody is, so you still have to evaluate income and everything else that's involved, and make a choice between eligible or not eligible.
Potentially.
So, as a practical matter.
So my concern is, this sounds like every agent, every caseworker, every social service department is going to be asked to do another step, and we know when that gets multiplied, that sounds easy here, it's not. So, and is there going to be recognition of that in terms of compensation?
Well, how is this financed? Isn't it true that this would be eligible for Medicaid administrative reimbursement?
I would think so.
So that needs to be clear in recognizing out of this body if we're going to be in the game, that stays with that.
I mean, a couple of things to think about that hopefully is not the world we're in today, because I agree the world we're in today, this is a big workload increase. But I think everything we've just talked about is workload reductions. So you have an online system. You have an automated MAGI calculation. We don't have any of this today. We're hoping we have it by 2014. We can't do any of this if we don't have this by 2014 or someday when they make us really have it. We're working hard towards the 2014 date. But it's a thing to build. And so you build this new system, and people are coming in online, they're coming in by mail, they're coming in by phone, and they're coming to a centralized place. So some of your traffic has disappeared by that. And if we keep the world, I'm saying we're keeping the world as is, because what we decided at the last meeting is we have central and we have local. And we'll, if we have time, which we probably won't, we'll move on to the discussion of local, or we'll make that the topic for the next meeting if you vote to have it. But we've said we envision a world with central and local, and we're trying to say what's central and what's local. And so part of that is now we've taken – and we've also simplified your assessment, because you will be using – I mean, we've complicated your life in the short term in that you're going to have a new system and WMS, and some people will live in the new system and some people will live in WMS until it can be completely replaced. That will not happen in 2014. Complete replacement. So local districts, if they're still our partners and still doing a piece of this in 2014, which we envision, will have two systems that they're interacting with, which I think is an added complexity. But it will also be automated. When you enter all that, the MAGI people in for their Medicaid eligibility, if the system should tell you, oh, no, they're not Medicaid, they're this exchange category, and then you hopefully will just hit a button and submit it to the exchange. So today where your workers manually look at documents and manually do the budget calculations and enter it into Mabel because Mabel doesn't have enough fields to do it for you and Mabel isn't automated, that's not the world we're talking about. That's, and it's hard to get your mind around it because you don't know another world. And that we don't have it yet.
But that's the thing. Until we have that other world, we don't want to sign up for more responsibility. I'm worried we're going to get the added complexity and the added responsibility, and I'd rather have it, this group take a clear position on, you know, our willingness to do complicated Medicaid cases and our willingness to do things that the systems isn't ready to do in the Medicaid world, but to also take a position that we're taking on a whole new assessment responsibility. It makes me very, very nervous because we'll get that, and we won't get the relief through the new world for another 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Isn't what he's really trying to say is that you need to be compensated for taking on additional duties, if that's what this is going to mean, although we don't know, because as Judy said, so much is being automated.
Well, being compensated, I absolutely would insist on. I'm even worried, but I don't, you know, I don't, sometimes the compensation deal never works out quite the way, you know, we have best interest. So I actually think it's a new responsibility that I prefer didn't come to us when it talks about the non-Medicaid determination of what the appropriate, if it's, and I may be able to live with just a simple transfer of information.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's what it is.
Let's go back to that paragraph on page 10.
It is federal rule.
It's federal rule.
When I look at that second bullet on page 10 there, the Medicaid agency, this is referring to the state.
Right.
I don't look at that and read that to mean the local districts, because the paragraph is talking about, must determine eligibility and enroll. And
can I just say, I mean, I can't imagine that the feds are going to say this is an obligation for states unless you delegate that to someone else and then they don't have that obligation. I mean,
it's not delegated. It's shared.
But the way the law is structured, the Medicaid statute is structured, is that there's a single state agency that's responsible, and then that agency has the authority to do some delegation of responsibilities, but at the end of the day, they still have to be held accountable to a set of single federal standards. The fact that New York has chosen to delegate some responsibilities to the counties, the fact that New York shares some of the financial support for their Medicaid program with the counties, doesn't change the structure of the federal Medicaid statute.
Right.
I can't imagine a scenario where the feds would say, oh, your counties are doing it, never mind that federal mandate doesn't apply to you.
But there are going to be certain categories of Medicaid eligible people that we've already said the locals may not have to deal with, that would go directly to the state.
I mean, I think that's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah. Are you saying we want to just
refer.
Say no MAGI? No MAGI at the local districts. Is that what you want to say?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know that I want to say that, but I do want to say that I don't know how we have the response should be. I am against us being lauded with given the responsibility of determining eligibility for the subsidized forms of health insurance coverage that are available in the exchange. That's what I'm saying, and that's how we feel in the city of New York. We think that's a state responsibility, and if we're an arm of the state in this program, all we're doing is we're keeping it within the Medicaid program. As Steve keeps pointing out, it's the Medicaid agency. All we're doing it is giving it to another part of the Medicaid agency to make the determination.
Well, I'll tell you, let me just say real quickly from a consumer perspective. This is Trilby from Empire Justice. I don't think we want to see a world where a consumer has part of their eligibility done by the county and then go back to the state to assess a different part of their eligibility. So my feeling
out under federal law.
Yeah, I mean, this is what is required for the MAGI population, that whoever's performing this determination of Medicaid eligibility for the state of New York must also look at potential eligibility for these other programs. If that is something the counties don't want to take on, perhaps this group should recommend that all MAGI applications be done centrally. I think that's the only way to avoid this new responsibility.
Okay.
Well, if I could just add, I think that part of that is it is the Medicaid agency's responsibility. And as we talk about who at the local level or what should be local and what should be centralized, this has to be factored into that.
But this is
not just an afterthought. It's something that...
It's very important, but we don't want to start splitting up for one person, splitting up...
The only thing I would say is that if it's totally invisible to the person, if you're working on a computer system and half of what they put in there goes this way and half goes that way and the answers come back, I don't know that that hurts the individual.
But how is... Okay.
You know, if it's behind-the-scenes determinations... I don't think the individual would even know about that.
I think you're right if it's totally automated. And
yes.
Those would be centralized in any event. But there might be some MAGI applications that are not automated.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones that I think the county would end up having this responsibility
mm-hmm.
on if they were handled locally. So perhaps we should cast our net a bit wider and say that all MAGI applications should be handled centrally. That, I think, is the only way to avoid some portion of this responsibility for looking at the other programs and potential eligibility for the other programs, only way to keep that out of the district.
I want to go back to what does it mean to assess their potential eligibility for the exchange, because in general, there are not additional verification or other requirements that are going to be necessary as part of that process. The information that the individual has given you is, frankly, more than enough because Medicaid continues under the proposed regs to require more information than what the exchange does, is more than enough information to make that referral if you have an automated system.
Right.
And so if they're, like what Ann was describing, that still has the county doing it. It's just saying it's automated. What I hear Commissioner Doar saying is, if it's automated, fine. I mean, if that's no more work for us, I'm just skeptical that it's going to be automated.
Right. No,
and if it's not automated, I'm really worried about that.
You got it.
And there's a difference between the local caseworker saying, well, you're not eligible for Medicaid, but you might be under insurance, so here's where that goes. And the local person having to say, actually, to say, yes, you are eligible, so here's how it's done.
They don't have to say you are eligible. They don't have the authority.
That's really unclear, and I share Robert's enthusiasm, and we've had lots of promises before. So I think maybe Trilby's talking about it being, like, just cut and dry. MAGI is a central obligation, is the best way to go.
Why would the information automatically be transferred?
That's it.
You know, if you're in the system,
the information is already there.
Yeah.
Medicaid determination is no, just transfer.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't the exchange look at all of that information? Someone's applied. I think that's what the intent of the federal rule is.
Right.
Make sure that they get a second look.
Yeah, I mean, because the exchange, see, the last bullet, which I didn't get to.
Right.
Let me just finish the thought. The exchange is obligated to do that eligibility determination. So the district in our world is assessing for someone who came to them from MAGI who isn't Medicaid eligible, but submitting it electronically to the exchange, and the exchange is obligated to do the eligibility determination. The last bullet, the regs say that exchange may contract with the MA agency to make the subsidy determinations. I'm hearing loud and clear in this room, no one wants that to happen. So that's clear, but the obligation is really for the – it's sort of like our FEs, getting back to Commissioner Jolly's point. Our FEs today, because we have all these different programs, their beauty is to say it looks like you're eligible for X or Y to get it to the right door.
Right.
That was the whole point of CHIP and Medicaid, because CHIP was a different door.
Right.
That's all you're doing at the district if you put on an FE hat. You're saying, well, you're not eligible for Medicaid. It looks like you may be eligible for this subsidy level through the exchange. I'm going to forward your material. You'll hear from the exchange directly. And that then becomes, you're a Medicaid determinator, but you become an FE for the exchange. And I guess if in that context, is that more comforting? I hear everything you're saying about the automation promises that don't come, and I have some concerns about 2014 automation world that I'm describing. So I get that completely, and I think that we should always caveat this is whatever we agree to, it provides that the automation is there.
Does the FE role or function carry with it the Medicaid admin reimbursement?
I don't
There is some guidance on that we just need to go back and check, but I think the answer is yes.
That's what I would think.
We need to check that there is.
But there is an obligation on the Medicaid agency.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that would fit with an admin role.
Well, we'll make a note of it.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the other question is, if we say that the fallback, if there's not automation, is no MAGI in the local districts, at what point does that call have to be made in order to effectuate that? Because that's
a
big deal.
Well, and truthfully, can you even have centralization without automation? I mean, we have to build this automated system to accommodate the regs.
Right, right.
We're going to build, I think the reality is we're going to build it, people keep talking about it skinny, whatever that means. It'll be built with absolutely what you need to get to 2014 without a lot of the things, like MSP automation, nice, really, really good, not that hard, but probably won't be by 2014 because it just, things are going to fall off even if they're kind of easy in order to get to the things.
The skinny is starting to scare me.
But if you, I want to.
Anorexic.
Anorexic.
If the districts say we don't want this, then there needs to be some real planning to build up that local presence and to redirect that financing towards FEs or others who do want that job and have to have the job. Have to have local on-site.
Right.
That's a mandate under the
Yes, and I think it's really important that local role will have to be a little bit familiar with the other assistance that they exchange, because otherwise it's not meaningful consumer assistance. So, I mean, if the districts really don't want to go there, I think that's a really important message to take in.
So if we understand that regarding the financing, there's potentially a Medicaid admin reimbursement, potentially.
There's definitely a Medicaid admin reimbursement for MAGI determinations, and I believe that extends to the requirements related to the exchange referral and transfer of information.
Okay, so we have that. What about for non-districts, FEs? Is there a potential financing
opportunity? There's an obligation on the exchange to fund Navigator, and that has to be exchange-financed kind of grant program to fund Navigators. I think that FEs, to some extent, could morph into, not plan, they can't be plans, but the CBO FEs I could see morphing into a Navigator role, and that will be funded by the exchange.
Okay.
You could also say that dollars right now that are being spent at our 50-50 match for eligibility functions that districts are doing, if districts stop doing those functions, we need to be shifting, build a different workforce who's
going
to do those functions.
Agreed.
Functions have to continue.
Agreed.
That's right.
So why don't we get back to this when we have our local, what is local conversation?
Okay.
I think this
fits into that
very well into what is local. And then that gives some of the district county representatives some time to think on this a little bit to see whether they really want to come out and say we don't want to touch MAGI or we're okay with an FE role if it's compensated or some other recommendation.
Right.
Because it's hard to decide that live.
Right.
Let me just finish up really quickly with other states and then show you where I think we are in a picture, and I'm over time. No state has an exchange that meets the ACA requirements. That should be comforting to all of us. We don't have statute yet. We are moving ahead. You know, we have grant funding that we're working really hard on lots and lots of things to implement and move forward. So when we do have statute, they'll be the recipient of lots of good stuff that we've been working on. Massachusetts is the only state with a functioning exchange. They have no county responsibility for Medicaid. They have regional mass health centers. They have an essential processing unit. So, and they're working on their exchange. It's called the Connector. And one of their big challenges, and they're an early innovator state with us, is how do they integrate Medicaid and the Connector to be ACA compliant, because it's not that way today. But so they have a head start on us, but they still don't have an integrated system. And Ohio, I just put it on the list because Ohio delegates eligibility determination to the counties like New York. The difference is the county offices are departments of the central agency, so they have direct reporting to the central agency, and they have not made any decisions about their exchange yet.
Well, how is that different from New York?
Ours are
the agents of the state?
not like Office of the Department of Health. The Department of Health is a single state agency, and that's the difference in Ohio.
We feel like we are.
Well, Maryland is too. The county health departments they're county health departments, but they report to the direct report to the state.
Then they do Medicaid in those.
Maybe we have more discretion than we think.
Yeah, really.
We feel you use a lot of discretion.
I'm sure Trilby would agree with you. Okay.
Wisconsin has a mixed model. They have 50% of their Medicaid determinations, and it's sort of I don't know where we'll end up at the end of this, but I started to think we could end up looking like this. Medicaid is about 50% of their MA determinations handled at the local level, and they have local counties. I don't know the governance in that. The other 50% is through a statewide online system. And they're considering regionalizing their county offices. And that's not a third tier of region. That's doing away with county offices and regionalizing them, and then centralizing exchange eligibility using an online MA system. So they're also an early innovator state with us. They're kind of cousins to look at, I think. We can look and see how they are moving forward. Kansas has a central model. Their distinction is they created a Kansas Health Policy Authority that's responsible for Medicaid eligibility policy and the new eligibility system. They moved Medicaid from a social services agency into this health authority. The health authority also has the state employee benefits, so it's centralized differently. It's got all, and then local staff assist with applications, which are then sent to a central clearinghouse.
Do you know if those local staff are employed by the authority?
I think that they're not. I think I read that they're employed by the MA agency, and there may be some. This is moving as we, you know, it's not
okay.
done.
Yeah, I just wondered if they were.
So I think right
employed.
Now, I think they're state employees. I don't think they're authority employees yet. I don't know the details of whether they will be.
I think there's some transition going on.
There is transition.
They're actually dismantling the authority to bring Medicaid back in, is what I learned from Kansas, but I might be wrong.
And they were an early innovator state, but they returned their money.
Yeah, they returned their money, but they also got a huge federal grant.
They did.
Bit of an empty chest.
It's kind of weird, but anyway. So our picture. This is on two pages, so don't get panicked if you don't see the local role. And we have local districts in the title. Maybe that's not what we should have, so I will circle the word districts. Maybe it should say
local.
It's
easier to read on the slide if you want to.
It's the picture we started with, the straw person, but now it's not so straw person-like. It's more the consensus that we think from your responses. And, you know, the IT system and the rules for Medicaid CHIP and the exchange policy will live with DOH. It's possible when we have an exchange, the exchange will manage its own rules, but that's a detail. The exchange would handle the call center, the customer assistance, you know, how do I get an application, how do I apply, but also, you know, online phone applications, support the website and all online applications, as we discussed, centralized eligibility and enrollment for all MAGI, for all online, wherever initiated, recognizing that third-party assistance and local districts, as we said, need local presence, and then MAGI exceptions, automated non-MAGI, and then some of the Medicaid special populations that you could automate. And then, you know, third-party assisters or navigators, facilitated enrollers, or brokers. Someone last time suggested putting local districts in this box. Since we think they play this role, but we think they play a bigger role, at least in the world as right now, we didn't. But I just wanted to acknowledge if that's the role they want for MAGI solely, they could be moved there. But right now we envision a larger role.
Judy, in the exchange,
yes.
Would mail-in applications be included the same way consumer online are? Those would be?
Yes.
You meant to include them, right?
The consensus on the survey was for mail-in to go to the central place, yes.
Yeah, okay.
And if that's not clear, I'll clarify that.
It's up in the first line. Maybe it's highlighted.
That was consumers. I got it. But also applications. Okay.
Yeah. No, I see the confusion. Okay.
Yeah.
And then local districts, Again, you can tell me if that word districts needs to change or broaden or something.
Well, let me just stop there because it strikes me from this discussion that we're talking local, but we're not necessarily talking local districts.
Right.
So for purposes of this, I would take it off.
Yeah.
It may come back on, but right now we're not talking about specific definitions.
Right. We're at a consumer assistance in person. Some of these are clearly later down on the bullets, district functions. They can't be someone else's function, but local's fine, and when we have that discussion, we can identify it. But badge eligibility determination and enrollment for in-person apps to districts. So someone comes into the district, and HIX system is our shorthand for our new system that we're building. Using the new system, then eligibility enrollment using HX for MAGI. Use district systems for MA. It probably this changes because we agreed that really MA exception cases for MAGI are still MAGI and they're going to go through the new system, so they're not using WMS for that. So I will make that change based on our discussion today. But non-MAGI using WMS stays with the district. We agreed with to the extent that we're not able to automate it in the new system yet. Child support processing for MAGI MA referrals, that does go. We can have an automated link, but it does go. And then spend down and other MA programs. Again, both charts share these, and I think ultimately it's going to come to really teasing out program by program by program where it goes. But I think we have a theme that to the extent it's automated, it should be central. To the extent it's hands-on, it should stay hands-on, always with a local presence to handle even automated people. Does this picture get us closer?
I guess I have one little thing. You say always with a local presence, even to handle automated people. Does that mean to say that even that there will be no requirement that any, even the simplest type of application, will have to go through the centralized process?
Well,
want to be available for the hard ones and the troubled ones and the poor ones, but there might be – are we ever going to say that there's a beautiful, easy application that really has to go centralized?
We're not – I don't think we're allowed to say that, but we are – as I spend a lot of time in what's known as JAD sessions on our new system, and we have – been focusing on how to get people to use the online system, how to get people not to ask for paper, to make paper available, but make it really discourage it so that it isn't really easy to call up and get paper sent to you because nobody wants paper anymore. So we're having those discussions. I think that kind of fits into what you're saying. We can't bar your door and say, you know, if you make more than 300% of poverty, go away. If you are a door, I mean, that's really the question about if the local district is a MAGI door, it has to be a door for anyone who comes
you
in.
You are talking.
I am.
Well, you know, it could be that in a local county office, you could have a kiosk that, you know, people could use. I mean, you could make the online very available to these folks.
Or you could have a loader, like at the airport, you know,
when
there's someone standing there in case you run into trouble or whatever.
Yeah.
Self-service checkout at the grocery
store. Where we have that now, we have a food stamps kiosk, and they're not very popular with the consumers because when people come in, they just want to talk to somebody. And,
that's why they've come in.
That's why they came in.
In front of that computer, then they go, you know, and they just – so, and we consider that in our next discussion. I mean, what role is the district playing in that? Are we sitting behind them with a group of five, you know, answering questions for all five at a time, having them fill it out online, and it goes that way? That's – you can see that. But
the DMV, right?
Yeah.
It all goes back to the DMV. Where we're going.
Your number.
Just give it to us.
Your number. Your number is, right.
12.
Yeah, I think that's remember the population that we're talking about. They're just not going to be highly educated, used to computers. You know.
But the population that Commissioner Dorr wants to keep out are.
Yeah.
So I think we can actually,
yeah.
I mean, to be kind of overly blunt about it. you know, they're the 200 to 400% of poverty that may be eligible for a subsidy. Hasn't their issue is they're largely the group that has been cut out of insurance. They haven't been able to afford it. They haven't been poor enough to be eligible. So there's a lot of how you use a health plan, a lot of, I think, increased education on insurance and health care for that population, but not so much on how you use a computer. I think. That's my hypothesis.
And we also, I mean, computer literacy is at a rapidly increasing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's with the aging population.
The other thing, states that are ahead of us, like Georgia, states that are ahead of us on online applications for Medicaid, they felt in the beginning that no one would use it, and they get 60, 70% of their applications online.
I think that's Massachusetts' experience, too. With
so we all say, oh, our population is poor and vulnerable. They're not going to use computers. They will surprisingly use computers, but it isn't 100%.
Right.
So there are people who will come in. But I think you can – but to answer your question, we are looking for legal ways to discourage, things we don't want to have, like a lot of paper, a lot of traffic. But if it's an option, it has to be an option. If we close the door as the whole option, that's a different story. But if we have the option, it has to be open for everybody.
In terms of paperwork, and I apologize if you went over this before, my commissioner asked, what about documentation, all the paper that we require now? Because this is going to be hooked to the IRS system, is that pretty much going away?
The vision, and when you really read the Manat report, it'll be really clear. The vision is way less paper, way less documentation. We're still trying to go through different populations to see how well we think that will work. But the regs clearly say that they're given your tax information. If it fits and the person says, yeah, this looks right, you keep moving. If the person says it doesn't look right, a lot more acceptance of self-attestation is permitted now. But there are things where it says you can check other state databases. But the idea is you have to check electronically, and paper should be your last resort if you can't figure it out anywhere else. It says that over and over and over again in these regs. And, it's sort of like Commissioner Doar's issue with automation and the magic of the new system that's always coming that never quite comes. I sort of feel that way about the magic of these databases that do in paper. So I have some skepticism there. I want it to be our world. We will move to make it our world. And we'll let you know when we go through the different populations what paper we think remains. But I think it's going to – and, the other thing, if we bought the work number, some of you use it, but you don't use the expensive version. If we bought the expensive version of the work number, I think we could get more real-time income information. It's just expensive. It's like $3 a hit. And we have a lot of people. And so, that's going to be one of our recommendations is to build the work number in our hub. I don't know that we'll get there because that's much more real-time than wage reporting systems.
I think, as I'm clear, this kind of thing is something we'd like to be confident enough that we could make it as a recommendation to the MRT that it looks like a good distribution of function, given what we know today and pending some of our other discussions about local and state. So I think it's important that we at least give it a nod or a highlight anything that we think is problematic beyond what's been mentioned so that we can go forward with it as one of the products of the committee. It
so
doesn't
for districts is
yeah.
local
yeah.
level or local
yeah.
Does that work, though?
So hard, because here we have, use district systems.
So it's hard to take district out of there.
It doesn't work.
And if district stays in there, my thing to highlight would be support system and some sort of system for ensuring standardization, consistency, timeliness.
Can I take a stab at what I think we might have consensus on? I think if we added local district to the third-party assisters bucket, as a potential, not necessarily saying for sure, but that's an option. We've talked about them playing that kind of third-party assister role. And then under the local district bucket, the MAGI piece, I think we pull that out as a to-be-determined because I think the districts have said we don't know that we want to play that role or not. But I think the non-MAGI piece, the districts are doing that. And third-party assisters may help, but they're not going to do the eligibility determine. They're not going to replace the district role, at least so far as the discussion we've had today. I think we've had kind of a vision or a consistent consensus that the non-MAGI pieces continue to reside, to the extent that they can't be automated, they continue to reside until they can be automated at the local district. Do we have that where we ended up?
I think we ended up again with that proviso of support, and you know,
because
we haven't resolved yet if regional's off the table, how do we?
What is local?
Yeah, what does a local district function look like?
Although I think we have had a lot of discussion on this, but our view as a third party assister is a view I think a lot of counties would.
I can't hear you, David. I'm sorry. What?
I think the view of the counties as a third party assister is a view that's generally supportive. But from the counties. I mean, obviously, you would have to go back and ask that again, but, I mean, that's the way we are sort of envisioning our role now, and we don't really see that changing much.
They're sitting in the community. Right.
Right.
They're going to be in your office.
Right. Yeah.
Ah, they're coming.
So in some ways, for third-party assisters, that is the MAGI role in some ways, and there's an additional third-party assister role related to the non-MAGI that we've talked about that is kind of separate from that, but it's in a sense that if we add the districts under third-party assisters and we take the MAGI piece out of the local district box, I think that's maybe where we've ended up.
Yeah, let me try. I think that's right. And we could make it MAGI third-party assisters, take the MAGI out of the local district box, but also add a little box for other sort of local assisters on the non-MAGI, which we also talked about.
I also think that one. Yes, agreed with that. And then I think Trilby's point around the kind of accountability and consistency applies to the third-party assisters, it applies to local districts. And
the whole thing.
And to the extent that the exchange is doing Medicaid determinations, it applies to the exchange too. So I think maybe there's another layer in here. I don't know if it's top at the bottom or something or along the side that basically is connecting that, the centralized standards. I mean, it's pretty much from the previous slide where you say it's DOH's responsibility of the rules. And
the IT system.
And the IT system, but I think Trilby's also saying, and the enforcer of the rules. It's at the end of the day, it's DOH's responsibility to make sure that all these different parties are complying with consistently with those rules.
Right, and to increase, I mean, to recognize that in the world we have today, we have a problem with consistency. We have a problem with things not being standard. So to strive for improvement on that as being part of our recommendation and a mechanism for that if we can identify it.
Doesn't it? I'm just going to ask this question. It's probably a bad question, but what you just said, doesn't that complicate the insurance program, or is this a welfare program?
In what way?
Well, I mean, right now, there's some tension in everything we do in our local office about Medicaid. You know, right now it's a welfare program, and we're trying to make it a health insurance program, I'm assuming, under, you know, the federal changes. And if you're adding a layer of DOH overseeing local district role, you're...
The DOH already has that role because they're the single state agency.
Right.
Okay. It's clarifying that role and pulling it out for special attention, consistency, enforcing of the rules, also support.
I'm trying to understand where
I
don't give up on maybe there's something there.
I probably don't understand it as well as
I think. Well, none of us in the room really do.
Yeah. I mean, maybe your issue is that the front door is the Medicaid application, but there are other welfare-based doors off of that. And,
I mean,
and
I think
we're wrestling with how those separate functions.
I guess maybe I'm leaping ahead to the next discussion that I hope we are going to have about what is local and what is centralized and where's the cross-pollination.
I think you're identifying an important tension. I think it's there in Medicaid.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and I wanted to ask, I don't know, and again, I apologize for getting here late. The roads were closed at.
Yeah, we did talk there.
A question I continue to have, maybe you talked about it before, is what about all the other steps when if somebody is eligible or not eligible for Medicaid, our local person says, okay, let me look at HEAP, let me look at child care.
Let me hold that a second and just go to the next slide for a minute.
I fell off accidentally, so can I just ask a question?
Uh-oh.
I thought that someone had suggested on the chart on page 14 that we add local districts under third-party assisters and take the word districts out of over local and put instead could be local district, parentheses, and then delete MAGI eligibility determinations from that box. Did we make a decision on that, or what happened there? I fell off, and I had to get back on.
It was my proposal, this is Melinda, and I had said I had recommended adding local districts to third-party assisters. I was leaving the box local districts as local districts. I was saying there is a different role for local districts that we should call out separate from the local districts do things that navigators and facilitated enrollers and brokers are not going to ever do.
No.
So that's
so
why.
They'd be both.
Yeah,
this big
exactly.
Box.
It'd be in both, but for the MAGI piece, it would be more of a to be determined, because I think we're still kind of open on whether the local districts are solely third-party assisters on MAGI, where we'll add them, or whether they're also going to do this other function required under the federal law. And then there's clear non-MAGI functions that are only local district functions. And then we said we'd add a box for non-MAGI local assisters along the recommendation. We want to say that there should be those.
I see. Okay.
And the only reason I don't want to lose Martha's thought, which I think ties to.
Sorry.
I have another question, and I know you've talked about child support, I guess, at length before, but our district really thinks that locals shouldn't be doing this. The county shouldn't be having to determine and collect, in particular, collect money from the non-custodial parent where there's insurance. Is that something that you talked about?
Are you talking about the OTDA ABM that's complicated your lives?
Yes, that's what she's referring to.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know about
that. Yeah. I love that idea.
And Commissioner Dorr would echo that very loudly. We understand that's complicated your lives. I think that what we're trying to do is look at, as we implement MAGI, how we uncomplicate the world that we've created on child support within the federal rules.
Okay.
I don't know the specific answer to your question, but we definitely know that it's way too complicated and it'll drag us down in our MAGI world if we continue to have that statute and that reg. But just repealing the statute creates a different set of statutes. It's a whole conversation in of itself, and maybe I need a whole group of districts to work with me on it.
But just call OTDA, Judy, and tell them to hold off on that again.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a full process. This is unresolved and unacceptable at the moment.
Right.
I can give you Beth Berlin's phone number if you'd like.
Oh, I have it, and we've had a lot with sorry your bill didn't pass. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, okay.
So in this vein, this slide was really if we had time and we don't, and so I just want to set it up as what do we think the agenda for the next meeting that I think we're having is. I want to come – one of the things I was hoping to do if next one was our last meeting was come back and vote on the things we agree on and bring that all – wrap that all together, what we did today, the financing recommendation, the principles, the exchange recommendation from last time, and package it all as a package of recommendations. But then the other piece is other things that are thorny that we haven't talked about. And one of them, we just clearly said high priority. What do we mean by local? What is the local role? That will be a priority for discussion. But then there were other things. And I don't think, truthfully, voting and doing this long list will happen in the time we have. So I want you to maybe pick out some priorities. And one that I think Maggie was getting to and Martha was getting to is linking to other social services programs. And I want to call that one out as probably worthy of our conversation. If we accept this new world, what are these thorny linkages? And the PASSI piece I mentioned is a thorny linkage. So that's probably one. And then the other one, plan enrollment, we haven't really talked about where that happens. Mixed households, so you have MAGI and non-MAGI people. You have transitions. I mean, all are worthy of discussion. I just feel like we'd be there through dinner if we tried to tackle all of these. And we can transitions and coverage, so people go from subsidy to Medicaid and CHIP to, all the different transitions. Other transitions are you're 64 and you're in an exchange and now you're 65. It happens to you. Maybe that's less of a Medicaid issue, but So these are kind of the thorny issues as we try to handle some logic around MAGI and the easy cases, which has improved so easy. What do we want to weigh in on some of these more thorny issues? Plan enrollment probably is least thorny of that list. I would argue it's centralized, but with local help and choosing.
Yeah.
Keep that, yeah. So does this, if you were to, for the next meeting, clearly local role is number one. Other, and linked to social services programs maybe is number two. So that they're related.
Yeah. Question. Mm-hmm. Those two are going to define themselves. If you define the local role, you define the link.
Yeah. And then I guess we could keep this as, with those two, maybe all we get to do, and then voting on our recommendations, or we tackle these as we have time, like I tried to do today and failed. And this, you know, the end of our meeting is not the end of our conversations. You know, we have different venues where we talk with the consumers and the local districts. And again, I'm happy to set up a little group on child support. I think it might be needed. Not MRT related, just how do we get ourselves out of this mess we created for ourselves?
It's quite a mess. It's a mess.
Talking about mixed households, do you mean, for example, mixed immigrant status?
I don't mean that, but what mixed households means, but that could be a mixed household, absolutely. Yeah, it could be.
That's a problem because ACA doesn't, non-immigrant or an immigrant is non-citizen, it's not eligible.
They are eligible.
Legal.
Change has the same standards that we follow in New York.
For emergency coverage?
No, undocumented. The undocumented that are not covered.
Right.
But actually, the ACA improves coverage for legal immigrants more than Medicaid covers. Although we cover them because we pay with our state-only dollars.
So mixed you meant?
I actually meant MAGI, non-MAGI, but I think mixed immigrant status is appropriate in that list. There's probably other examples of mixed households. I mean, what do you do when you have an online app and it comes through and three family members are MAGI and they sail through and one doesn't? Then we need,
Chip in there too, right?
Well, Chip we're hoping is in the system. We expect Chip to be in the system and be electronically handled.
So I'll tell you from a plan perspective, just untangling those families and making sure they get to the right bucket is it's worth looking at.
So we'll do what we can. We'll do our top two, and then we'll do what we can of these. So I won't erase the slide. I think we can move on. And Joe had said last time, put some guiding principles once we get some consensus around our model. So that's why it's here. And we can see if maybe we can agree to these guiding principles, and Ann will guide us through that.
If you look at the slide, those are things that we said early on in our first meeting that were important. And I'm not sure what the last one involved stakeholders, how that works. We did do that in our process. But the other ones, what we wanted to do was come out with a model that addressed these things. Now, a lot of them are motherhood and apple pie, and you always have a little bit of that. But ones that have been reinforced today for me and at the last meeting was the whole automation, that automate everything you can automate. I think the other another principle, though, is to look at transitioning things so that you don't get in that bind of no automation but all of the responsibility, which I could see could happen if we don't take things in phases. So are there any on this list, I don't need to go through them, that you think are not important in terms of what we are working on and that our model would violate some of these? Because essentially these are the ones that we said we wanted to come out with. Steve?
And can I put on the table that an overarching guiding principle in my mind is that this is a state responsibility. That the implementation of the Affordable Care Act is a state responsibility. This is a federal state partnership. And I think that's a key guiding principle from my perspective.
The implications of that are,
that's really the federal government has created a program for the states. The state retains primary jurisdiction of this program. And that through its health insurance exchange,
That's the vehicle to implement it. And so far, they have not passed their legislation to implement their health insurance exchange. And
I would say the benefit of being clear about that as a guiding principle is that when you're uncertain about responsibilities or it's divided, things fall through the cracks and it causes difficulties. So I agree with Steve. It's worthy of finding some words
The other comment, Ann, I'd like to add here is it doesn't appear to be very focused on the consumer. There are some things in there, but it's more technical, and maybe that's the way we want to do it.
No, I do think there's something in here. In all of our conversations today,
we've been focused
on that.
Let's get back to the consumer. Mm-hmm. What's the best access for the consumer?
It's very focused on maximize gains and coverage, reduce the number of uninsured. Those are all consumer issues.
Yeah, I saw that.
Plus performance accountability.
I think the point was, Becky, go ahead.
I was going to say, could it be handled like this? And the administrative approach should be, the administrative approach should improve outcomes and reduce costs, or be cost effective and improve outcomes. Focuses a little more on the consumer.
You might also say, and improve patient or improve enrollee experience or consumer experience, because that's often falls off the,
Can we talk about the stigma that we've talked about, Medicaid and health insurance? We mentioned that, what you were mentioning, Maggie. Do we want to have it in here?
I think, Steve, if I can just, it goes back to your earlier point and why I think it is important that we define the fact that this is a state responsibility to work with the federal government. It starts at the federal government. The state has to figure it out, because everything we've talked about today, until the state obligates itself in some way, we're just talking, and so that really does have to be a guiding principle, that the state steps up and acknowledges that this is a state program and define its compliance with the Federal Health Care Act. I mean, some of it's mandated, obviously. So that goes back to Steve's earlier point.
And it also ties in with the resolution we made the first meeting,
mm-hmm.
which was
passed.
We want that legislation passed, that exchange legislation passed.
May I make another? Whenever I see guiding principles on eligibility and enrollment, I like most of what's there, or all of what's there, I think it is important to have something that acknowledges that the state will have a responsibility to protect against fraud and abuse. I just think to not mention it opens us up to unnecessary criticism, and it's true. We should, under automation, the next bullet could be protect against fraud and abuse.
Program integrity.
Integrity.
Yeah, program integrity.
Program integrity, Robert.
Yeah.
The code word.
Well, the regs have that obligation on us as well.
Yeah. When Steve mentioned
preserve program integrity.
When Steve mentioned his point, I wasn't sure whether his point was referring to passing the exchange legislation,
that
some point in some way it's a message that this is not up to the counties to figure out how to live within.
Well,
this
we're gonna ruin it if you give it to us. You have to have the state own up to it.
I promise. A lot of the decisions here are around state definition of the program.
That's right.
The new world.
Right.
And that's where the difference between welfare and health comes into play.
Yeah.
Are we health insurance? Are we a welfare program?
Yeah.
And so that really clearly needs to make any of this make sense or be effective.
That's right.
It's something like the ACA completes the transition that has been occurring in New York of Medicaid from a welfare program to a health insurance program. I mean, the truth is that transition has been underway for a number of years, but the ACA makes it really clear that it's a health insurance.
It's part of a health plan.
Does that, Maggie, get at what you're
saying?
Well,
I mean, I think that's part of the discussion. Yes, the federal government is making it very clear, but now we need the state to
implement that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
I wonder if the title here, I don't know how this is going to get written up, but it seems this is guiding principles not just for eligibility and enrollment, but sort of for the design of the whole system. I might, I would think that it's a guiding principles for implementation of the exchange and Medicaid
eligibility and enrollment
percentage. Uh-huh.
I think the thing about the transition, what's here seems to talk a lot about kind of what it's going to look like at the end. I think we need to be really clear about the transition as well. And this thing about automation, I have to say, 2014? I mean, I know this is complicated, but...
3 years?
A really long time.
Not really. Not in a system world.
Not to build IT system without
building. Well, I'm terrified soon it's going to be 2012, and we only have 2 years.
Okay. All right. So especially since then, you're all saying that if we're lucky, it'll be 2014.
But the MAGI rules are easier, and so I do think we can get built what we need to go through the MAGI rules. We have an RFP out on the street. It'll be due in soon for a systems integrator.
Okay.
As soon as we have – I think I'm going to feel a lot better when we have a systems integrator because I accept humans who are responsible for building, and that right now we're all talking to ourselves and trying to move it forward, and having a real firm that will come in and do this I think will make a huge difference, and then you'll start hearing more optimism from me.
Okay. Well, if it's kind of a bullet says something like – county shall be held harmless for transition, right?
A little broader, but that's it, right?
Counties are willing to be partners in a difficult period of a couple years, but there has to be, since we have already said it's a state responsibility, we really... You know, counties in some way need to be protected from additional costs and, you know, unreimbursed responsibilities during the transition.
I feel like we're moving a little bit beyond guiding principles of kind of, I mean, I think we all have to agree to recognize that the transition is going to be a challenge. I think that there's been a lot of comments around, we're talking about the world today and we're talking about the world of probably 5 years from now, and that there's a transition period that is going to be really hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that that's – I mean, I think we need to have that common understanding, but I don't know that that's part of a guiding
– Well, it's a guiding principle because a lot of what we're talking about is stuff that we would automate, when we can automate, things we can't know today because we don't know. I mean, in a lot of things, this transition period needs to be acknowledged.
Yeah. I want to make a comment on the title. I'm okay with you thinking it's narrow, but exchange or ACA is too broad.
Yeah.
Because the exchange has a lot of functions aside from enrollment. So what about guiding principles for exchange coverage implementation? So even that has the qualified health plans. Because we haven't even talked about qualified health plans.
Why don't we work with that offline and come back?
And that's why we said eligibility enrollment.
Yeah,
and
have at it. Offline. come up with 10-5.
I don't want to just dismiss Martha's suggestion about specificity, but I think there's – no, not about that, about the about holding harmless. And I think in that concept of a transition where there's often role confusion and we're trying to work things out, maybe there's something that can be said about – acknowledging that we have to understand the impact of all of this on various components and plan for it.
Is that part of our financing?
Well, maybe not. Oh, maybe, yes.
I thought you were headed in that direction with your first comment about the automation process and triaging and phasing being key. I think if you take that thought just a step further, you get to this concept of we've got a lot of work to do and we've got to do it as well as we can, but we have to recognize it's not going to be perfect and, you know.
Well, we should pay attention to unexpected financial and workload burdens
like that,
that might be created as a result of this, right?
Yep.
Right. I mean, I can see having to operate two systems side by side.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, our county's going to need, for example, additional IT support, IT personnel, are we going to need, you know, new hardware? What's going to
cost of rolling this out, and where does that come from? So, you know, maybe that isn't what this is about, but I think some acknowledgement.
And I think Maggie's point about, you know, when we look at our financing resolution that we propose, I think some of that is that intent of not having anybody left holding the bag, yeah, should be in there too, right?
And that is next on our agenda, the financing.
Right, it is. On this, you know, we'll, I appreciate, Kate, that some of these things may be guiding principles and others may be just reminders to the group as to why we came up with what we came up with. Some of it is that it's too difficult.
And before we leave, 16, thinking about the need for training and education. Educating the public was discussed in many of our meetings. There's going to be a lot of confusion out there. And
that's very important.
You know, the county folks are on the table and spend a lot of time talking about county issues. But are there issues with respect to third-party assisters with financing CPOs? I don't know if that's a guiding principle on the checklist.
Well, you know, to me, there might be a place, even on the drawing, for a support system, which would include consumer education, staff training, and, you know, facilitator, FE training. There's got to be some place on here, and it really doesn't appear on our drawing.
Good.
And we don't know yet if it's going to be a regional thing or just another function at the state, but I think it's important enough from what I'm hearing that it needs to appear on this drawing in some way or another as a key component.
Maybe that is a good function for the region. There are those that are looking for a regional function. That might be a good role for the region.
Is the current health department region, you mean, or a new regional?
Some kind of, you know, support, continuing education, training and education role out of the regions. I don't know how they're going to do it.
Navigators for. I mean, do I have this wrong in my head that navigators are supposed to emerge out of this and do an awful lot of community-based education for all comers?
No, I think you're exactly right. And we mentioned how the federal law requires that that function be developed and funded by the exchange.
It's more retail, though. And I think that what Ann is talking about, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but what Ann's talking about is a broader, like, public education and training of the navigators and training of local people.
Okay.
They may
and that support that we talked about for complicated long-term care cases, that's a whole kind of support technical assistance function that's going to have to be here. Martha, you reminded me of that with all of this change. So we kind of put that in there somewhere.
Yeah, and we talked about that in our schematic as sort of a floating role for the centralized agency to be supporting and to be monitoring.
And Bob, well, navigators are like super FEs. You know, they have a bigger job than current FEs,
and they're going to appear from where?
They do, but
exchange when it exists. It's required to fund them.
They're enrollment free. They have no enrollment responsibility, so they have, I think, about general assistance, general education, but I don't.
They assist with applications. They do assist with
enrollment. They assist with enrollment, yes.
What about the CAPS?
The CAPS?
You taught me all this.
The CAPS have a broader range of responsibilities. They also assist with.
All right. Well, we'll work with these and they'll come back to you so that when we do present our report.
Can you give me one on phasing?
On phasing? Yeah, we'll add one on phasing. That it has consensus of the group that this is we spend our time on. Okay. What's next?
Lunch. I don't know if it's
lunch here.
It's fine. I don't know if you want to rush through.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where would we check? Can I explode?
I don't know. I'm going to check right here.
Yeah, we could use a break, I think. What?
But you're giving me one or not.
Well, I think we're going.
Maybe
they. Yeah. Should we break till 1?
Yeah, why don't. What if we're going to break till 1, if that's all right. And by that time, lunch will be here. If it gets to just before 1, we'll all eat while we move on to our next piece. We will reconvene at 1. All right?
Whatever you are. Oh, really?
Yeah.
It could be
can't tell by the news.
The
they just said pumpkin.
I think we
actually dial back in at 1 or?
Yeah.
Should they dial back in at 1?
Oh, I don't know.
Robert, hold on and we'll get you an answer to that.
We could probably leave our phone on, but I don't know. Do you
know
the
answer?
Can
we'll get you an answer in just a minute.
You can call 359 number. But I'll mute them
right
now.
So we're going to hang up and then dial back in at 1.
Okay.
Well, I just got an email from a colleague who was taking
the leader has disconnected. The conference will be terminated in 2 minutes. The leader has turned lecture off, and your lines have been unmuted. The leader has disconnected. The conference will now